The second reading is just a few quotes from some people on trust. Thomas More said, "We need people in our lives with whom we can be as open as possible. To have real conversations with people may seem like a simple, obvious suggestion, but it involves courage and risk." Charles H. Green says, "It takes two to do the trust tango, the one who risks, the trustor, and the one who is trustworthy, the trustee, and each must play their role." And then Bob Van Oerik says, "Trust is built when someone is vulnerable and not taken advantage of." And those sort of summarize a lot of what I'm going to say now in the message. I'm going to begin with a story that Simon Sinek tells. The people I found really interesting about trust are Brené Brown, Simon Sinek, who has the third most watched TED Talk, at least on the day he bragged about it, and then someone named Charles Feltman, and someone named David Arnestad. I'll talk about trust and community, and they end up saying similar things because of the data they find. But Simon tells this wonderful story about Bob Chapman, who has saved several organizations, all with horrible names that are hard for me to remember, but one is Hasten San Diego. There's one in the Midwest, this is further south, and it was a manufacturing company that he took over to try to save. And as he's waiting to go in the first day, the new CEO that nobody knows is the new CEO, he noticed a group of people about to go work on the line, manufacturers, talking about upcoming games like the Super Bowl, and joking with each other, and smiling, and punching each other gently, and having a really good time. And then the bell rang for work, and it was like someone wiped their faces. They became sullen and walked to work. And so he started to study the company and its culture and how it worked. And one day he sent a man to study some things in South America, same kind of industry, and the man came back. And he said, "I want to hear what you've learned." And the man said, "Do you really want to hear?" And Bob said, "Yes." "Will I have a job tomorrow if I tell you?" "Yes." He said, "Well, in the culture I went to, I was like a manager. But here, there are two different groups of people. They're the people who work on the line and the people who work in the offices. The people who work in the line have to punch into work. They have to, they can take a break after a few hours when the bell rings. They come back when the bell rings. They take another break for lunch when the bell rings. If they're sick, there's all sorts of repercussions. They may not get paid. The managers don't clock in. Nobody checks on what they're doing. They don't do their day by a bell. They take lunch when they need to. It's like they're two different worlds." And I found when I was out investigating this other company, I liked life better. I liked the job better. Nobody was watching over my shoulder all the time. And what Sinek says that Chapman found, and others have found, is that trust is not just a nice, soft thing to have in a company or a community. It is essential. And in order to have trust, you have to give it first. These workers who worked on the line weren't given trust. But after that conversation, that very day, Bob Chapman stopped the bells. He stopped the punch-in system. He started to act as if they had trust. And the workers started to treat each other better. When someone was sick, they'd start to give them their vacation day. And the whole company did better. People took care of their machines as they hadn't before. And the company regrouped and was worth millions of dollars more, in large part because the culture shifted because of the injection of trust. When people can work together, it makes a huge difference. And Sinek says that and sees that. And he says, good leaders inspire trust. Now, a leader can be anybody. People in authority are different, but they're not necessarily leaders. They have the power, and we listen to them, maybe grudgingly, but if they're leaders, we give them our trust. But also a leader can be anybody, you know, somebody who makes a good decision about how we're going to go through and get food. Somebody who waits in line last. Sinek's book is called Leaders Eat Last. And the reason he says that is that in the Marine Corps, that's what happens. And one day he watched, when he was in Afghanistan, he was embedded with the Marines, he watched the men go eat, and the officer waited, and there was no food for the officer. But then his men brought him some of theirs. He built trust. So anyone can be a leader. You just have to be willing to be one of those people who sacrifices. We trust that leaders are people who will never make you give up something of yours for them. He said, when we get angry at bankers and CEOs because they earn so much money, it's not the amount they're earning, although it's atrocious. It's the fact they've broken a social contract. They are making the people they lead sacrifice for their good, for their things. A good leader never makes you sacrifice your good things for them. And so he talks of, he puts this beautiful picture up of a horrible scene happening in a mall in Kenya. Do you remember the shootings that happened in the mall and how someone was there with a phone? And he shows a picture of a natural leader, a mother lying on top of her daughter to protect her. Leadership is biological, our instinct to do it and our instinct to receive it. We want to feel safety from those who lead us. We want to trust they have our best wishes at heart. And it's a biological thing. He says we don't have to dream of a better world. We have to embrace what is and do it. Would we be upset if we were to give millions of dollars to Martin Luther King Jr.? No, because he has a vision. And he is leading people because they want to go that way. He was somebody who understood what it was like to live under segregation. But as he spoke about it, he appealed to other people who'd suffered from it too. Leaders lead people in ways they want to go. And they have a vision, and they're willing to sacrifice. Would we give $350 million to Mother Teresa, right? But we don't want to those who aren't giving for a larger good. We don't have trust in them. So Sinek says, trust in a community and leadership in a community is based on those things, and it's almost biological. Charles Feldman, who wrote the book, The Thin Book of Trust, An Essential Primer for Building Trust at Work, has a really lovely definition for what trust is. It's choosing to risk making something you value vulnerable to another person's actions. So you've got something you really value, and you're willing to put it out there. For me, in the youngest in my family, putting out my deepest questions or needs or hopes or dreams, that wasn't always an easy thing to do because I had siblings who'd laugh at me, put me down, just because I was dumb and stupid and young. But that takes trust, right? And when you don't feel safe with a person or in a specific situation or any situation, you're not going to trust them. You're not going to give them the most valuable thing to you out there for them. But when you are, you can do amazing work together. And Feldman talks about the four things you really need to build trust with other people. And again, for him, the biggest problems he sees in groups of people working together is when they don't have trust. And the biggest thing you need to do is build up trustworthiness, right? And it doesn't matter if you think you're trustworthy, it's how other people see you. And when people take little surveys, they see themselves as trustworthy. They see their coworkers as a little less trustworthy. And they see the big kahunas of the organization as really not trustworthy at all. And there are reasons for that. He says that What we look for is sincerity, that you say what you mean and it's the truth. Not only that you believe this, but it's been backed up by facts, right? You know, we've been playing around with the truth a lot lately. We want it to be backed up by facts. We also want accountability. You know, if you've hurt me, you'll come to me. We want reliability. We want to know you're going to keep on doing this. And we want to know that you care. That's one of the important ones. And with reliability, what happens is, if you're the big kahuna, people see your actions more. You have more time to mess up and seem unreliable. And with reliability, if you make a promise that you're going to do something, you've got to make sure you have everything you need to do it. Sometimes people will say, hey, I know you're really good at greeting. You be the greeter for the month. But you haven't told them, I have to go away. I have surgery. You have to communicate and let people know how you can be or not be reliable. Those are some of the insights from Charles Feltman. But I come back again and again to Brené Brown, and she talks about something called braving. Diane Davis and I were at an installation up in Tucson for Bethany two Saturdays ago, and Matthew Funk Crary got up in his charge and acted out braving. He did all the letters. I can't do them. But it's a very important thing to remember. So braving is what she thinks you need to do to build trust. The first B is for boundaries. So I need to know you respect my boundaries and you respect your own. You're going to say to me, I can do this, I can't do this. You're encroaching, you're not. You're going to be open. You can't have trust without boundaries. Then, of course, R is for reliability. Again, you've got to work out, can you do what you say you're going to do? Are you really reliable? And in science, she says, with an experiment, you have to repeat it hundreds of times. You're not just reliable once. You've put marbles in that jar over and over and over again. Then there's accountability. And Feltman also talks about how if you break trust, and you will, it isn't the end of the world. You just speak differently with people. You apologize. You take ownership. You say, what did I know I did this. How can I fix it? And then there's something called the vault. That's the V. Does anyone know what the vault is? That's really interesting. It's about confidentiality. If you tell me something, I'm not going to tell anyone else. And if I tell you something, I trust you won't tell anyone else. And that becomes tricky in churches because we want to know someone hasn't been here for weeks, and we want to have an idea about why. But there's a difference between coming up to me and saying, I think someone's sick, and saying, I think she's got stage 4, blah, 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 and see the difference? The important thing is to tell what's yours to tell, but not what isn't yours to tell. And as Brené says, the flip side of the vault that we never think about is, someone comes up and sits next to me and says, hey, did you hear this person's going through a horrendous divorce? And I think her partner has a lover. She's just shared what isn't hers to share. And will I trust her with my information? And she talks about friendship through enemies, you know, the company of haters. It's not real trusting that you build up when it's all about hating a third person together, right? So there's the vault. Then there's, of course, integrity, that you are going to, and Feltman talks about this also. People have to see that you're going to do what you say. You're going to have to live your values. And then there's non-judgment, N. I can come to you and fall apart, and you won't judge me. And finally, generosity. If I mess up, you'll try to give it the most generous spin and then come ask me about it. And she gives this lovely example. You realize that yesterday was your mother's, the anniversary of her death, and you were really sad about it, and your friend didn't show up for you, didn't call you, didn't remember. There's several ways you could respond, right? There's the clearly not a good friend, I'm not going to respond to any email. There's the calling up and saying, you clearly don't understand me or value me, this isn't a good relationship. Or there's the, yesterday I was missing my mother, I trust that you care about me. I could have used a call, but I understand that you really care about me. So which option do you pick, right? I mean, it's way more fun to do some of the others. But anyway, so I think upbraiding is really important to remember in communities. And Brené also challenges us to do it for ourselves, to build trust with ourselves, to have boundaries with ourselves, to be reliable for ourselves, to not beat up on ourselves when something hard happens and we let ourselves down, to be accountable, to maybe keep some of the secrets we don't need to share, to have integrity, to be non-judgmental, and to be generous. And if we start with trusting ourselves, we can give it to community. I know that this has been kind of dry, but I think it's really beautiful and really important. And when you hear, I've been watching videos and reading books of these people in management, in industry, talking about how important it is to care and feel and be vulnerable. It's a really beautiful thing. We know about that in church. We don't always do it perfectly, but we know this is one place you can show up and be vulnerable, hopefully. We got it. We can do it better. But it's really exciting to know the whole world needs some of what we've got, right? The whole world needs that vulnerability, that openness, that sharing. Brené points to right after World War II, when the Air Force was founded, the officer's guide talked about fear multiple times, talked about love multiple times, talked about being willing to sacrifice yourself for fellow people multiple times, and now it doesn't. She had to hunt for that original guide for behavior as a leader. She found it in the chaplain's corps. But it's the new guide for leadership in the Air Force. It doesn't talk about love or fear or vulnerable emotions. It talks about strategic leadership, planned leadership. And the more we take emotion and vulnerability and trust out of wherever we work or live or be, the less alive it will be, the less we'll trust each other, the less we'll work with each other. This whole worship service has been an amazing planning and interconnection of trusting each other, coming up with great creative ideas. That wouldn't be possible if we weren't able to be vulnerable. So I challenge all of you to be brave. And I will probably refer to that again and again. Thank you.